So picture this, two children are trying to find their way home, they're on the run, and a dangerous man is out to get them. What's going to happen next? Can they outrun him? Will they meet with foul play? Or do they make it home? Well, you'll have to read Tony Burch's debut novel, Blood, to find out how that story ends. The book is set on the back roads of Victoria and in cigarette-stained hotels. No one's looking out for the brother and sister duo, Jesse and Rachel. Their mother, Gwen, is angry, unstable and self-absorbed, and her boyfriends usually bring home trouble. And in this novel, trouble's name is Ray Crowe. Blood is a novel suffused with the primal bonds of family and heart-beating suspense. The book shows Sarah Lestrange almost missed her train stop reading it.
Tony Burch, when I finished the novel, I was finally able to take a deep breath. Did you breathe while you were writing it?
Oh, yeah, it was a long process of about 2 years, actually. What I found in doing the book was that I did want to write something that would really have a sharp pace to it, that would keep a reader interested and hold the reader for the duration of the novel. And the comment that you've made is the sort of feedback I've got, which has been really pleasing, that people have either read it in one sitting, or as the book has gone on, they've become enthralled in the sort of drama of the book. So it's very rewarding to get those sort of comments, but you have to take a lot of breaths as a writer to get the job done.
Even though I couldn't stop reading it, equally I wanted to stop reading it because I was worried for the main characters, mm-hmm. Jesse and Rachel, their half-brother and sister. Mm-hmm. They do a blood pact ritual to bind them even more together. Why did they need to do that ritual?
Well, I think that there's this realisation with Jesse that he has very little faith in his mother, Gwen, who's a very dysfunctional person. And Jesse wants to free himself of his mother and the circumstances he's in, but feels, in a sense, bonded to his sister, or he feels very responsible for her. And the only reason Jesse goes through this blood pact of exchanging blood, it is a little melodramatic and theatrical in some senses, but he states just before this that he had to do something to shut her up, his sister Rachel, but also he had to do something to calm her. So the exchange of blood is so that she feels that Jesse is, if not biologically, but certainly emotionally, her full brother, and her full brother, more importantly, who will look after her. So from Jesse's perspective, it's something to gain Rachel's confidence. And for Rachel, it's a very dramatic act, a frightening act that she's involved in, but it's so that she can have faith and believe in her brother's ability to take care of her.
This mix of primal ritual and suspense, it does create a heady mixture. How did you go about layering the story with these elements?
It's interesting because what I would say is I had the very strong backbone or architecture for the story, but often when you write first drafts, or when I write first drafts of longer work, it may appear a little flat, the narrative, and I have a very vivid imagination and I'm very interested in what you might call the visual or cinematic aspects of writing. So the descriptions of landscape in this book, the use of tarot cards as sort of fortune-telling devices, the relationship between Jesse and what he sees in the wider world, they would be photographic images that I developed as I was writing the book, and often they would come to me in between passages of writing and I'd feel a real desire to include them in the book. Of anything that I've written until now, it's one that I worried about least. It's the one that I feel most satisfied with, and when I let it go and that period between the final markup and seeing the book in the shop, I was very comfortable with what I'd done and expected to have an outcome that it's had. So there's been a good readership for it so far. There's been good feedback, good comments.
This is described as your debut novel, but mm-hmm. of course you've got two collections of short stories behind your belt. You're published widely in magazines with your short stories, so you have got a bit of a background behind you.
Oh yeah, I've been publishing short fiction in particular for over 10 years. I hadn't had an opportunity or real desire to write a novel before this. I really like the short form. And I'm still writing short stories, and I've published several short stories this year after having completed Blood. But Blood itself came from a long short story that I wrote for a book called Brothers and Sisters that was published in 2009 by Allen and Unwin. And I felt after I finished that short story that I really did have an amazing attachment, a strong attachment to these two young kids, Jesse and Rachel, and I really felt that to do justice to their journey and to justice to the strength of these children, I wanted to put them in a bigger picture, a wider landscape. So the novel came out of that short story.
Well, despite life's best efforts to hold him back, Jesse is an endearing character, as you say. It sounds like you really attached to him while you were writing him. He, his mother, Gwen, is pretty hopeless, worse than hopeless, neglectful and abusive. And he has this burden to make sure Rachel is okay and himself. All the while you're reading it, the book, you really want him to succeed. Why did you choose children as the centrepiece for this drama?
Oh, this, I remember the moment of this short story that became the book is that I was actually listening to the radio and a documentary program was focusing on children whose parents, particularly their mothers, who had been imprisoned, and those children either spent time with their mothers or in prison or been fostered out. And what struck me in the interviews of these children who were by then older, teenagers or young adults, was the incredible courage that they had shown during this period of dislocation. But also the frightening aspect of it was that what you understood through those interviews is that children have enormous faith in their parents, and even when parents muck up, children will remain loyal to their parents for a long, long time. And I thought about it firstly in relation to being a parent. I have five children and understood that when you tell your children that they will be safe, when you tell your children that you will take care of them, that they believe you, even if you have acted badly. So I wanted to write a narrative where children would be tested in relationship to their parents. And in Jesse's case, he's been tested to breaking point and he can no longer maintain that love and attachment for his mother, whereas Rachel still believes in her mother. So it was that tension that I wanted to put into this landscape of a sort of a road novel where these children must rely on each other to survive and cannot rely on adults.
Well, that's right. I was going to say it's not only Gwen who has failed in her responsibility to her children. Pretty much all of the adults have, even the ones who are nice, who pick them up on the side of the road, kind of fail to see that these kids are in terrible trouble and strife.
Yeah, it's interesting that because the other at one point, Jesse does reflect that even though their mother Gwen had often told them that there was a lot of danger around them, he makes the point that often when they'd been homeless and living in the city, that they'd felt that they were invisible, that no one seemed to take notice or care about what their situation was like. And that reflects in part a reality that I think often we do ignore or don't notice people on the margins, whether they be kids wandering the streets or whether it be older homeless people. So all of my work has been interested in bringing those people on the margins into the centre. But also I think with Jesse, because he is so, he's only 13, but he's had so much life experience and more experience than some people have in a whole lifetime, is that he's also quite world weary and quite old and streetwise. And there is a moment in the book where a relatively nice couple who pick them up and give them a lift some of the way, they part company. And I have been asked, why wouldn't it be the case that the adult male in that case may not suggest to Jesse that it would be dangerous for him to be alone on the road? But I think in that case, that male character, without having to state it in the narrative, my sense was he would realise that the sort of person Jesse is because he has like experience in some ways, so that you shouldn't always expect that people will take children under their care. In Jesse's case, I think he gives off a sense that he needs to take care of himself and would.
Tony Birch, earlier you mentioned that you try to write cinematically, and in fact, there are cinematic references within mm-hmm. the book. The kids, you know, they're not going to school, they're going to see movies. Mm-hmm. But tell me about the 1950s film, The Night of the Hunter.
Well, that's a film directed by Charles Laughton, the great actor, the only film he directed. And it stars Robert Mitchum as a completely psychopathic preacher who is also a killer. And he befriends and then kills the mother of two young children, a boy and a girl. And then he chases those children across a landscape similar to Blood. And he pursues them both for money that he's seeking that they have, but also with a great desire to kill them. when I thought about blood and that notion, The Night of the Hunter is a very direct and obvious reference point. And I actually did re-look at the film at times when I was writing the book. And I didn't want to retell the story as much as to get a sense of how the characters would fit in that landscape. And the Mitchum character is much more obviously psychopathic than Ray Crowe, the devious character in Blood, particularly in the first instance. And he is a person who has this strange mix of religion and a demonic presence, which is epitomised in the tattoos on his hands, which have, these are the great icon tattoos of cinematic history, love and hate, which many people have used as motifs. So I wanted to convey some of that sense of the biblical nature of this journey without simply mimicking that book. But it is an obvious and direct reference point, which I'm very happy to have been influenced by.
I was surprised when Jesse was able to explain to Ray and a man called Limbo the difference between purgatory and limbo.
Yeah.
That did surprise me. It was a little jarring. I understood that his grandfather was deeply steeped in Christianity and had explained this, but it was still jarring.
Yeah, I think, I think what Jesse gives away, and this is clear throughout the book, is not all that he knows. And I think the point about, while he talks to this limbo guy about the reference to purgatory, the notion that he doesn't give away is that limbo, in fact, is a place of purity. So he understands limbo as a place, and I do, as a place of children who are born with mortal sin on their soul that has not been extinguished through baptism. So that, for me, it was a means of him being able to, just for once in the book, being able to, in a sense, not only talk back to Ray, but to show a greater level of understanding. So I think it was a device that I used particularly to fit in with the other religious motifs of the book. And the other thing is, one of those notions that you have when you think to write a story is that I know someone called Limbo, who's not like this character in the book, by the way. And early on, when I was thinking of naming the characters, and I name every character before I ever write a story, is that once I'd named this Limbo character, there was a clear sense in me that this scene would become part of the novel. I do have a habit often of dreaming up what you might call, not a single frame, but a few frames in that cinematic way of a novel, and I have to find a place for them.
So was this part of the layering that we were talking about?
Oh, absolutely. And there's another scene of an elderly woman in the cemetery, a quite frightening-looking figure. I've done a lot of photography in cemeteries, particularly at Melbourne Cemetery, where for many years I photographed angels. I call them angels with dirty faces or broken angels, and I always wanted to insert those images of a run-down, ruined cemetery into a story. And when I thought about the notion of this figure who looks something like a scarecrow, once I'd got to a scene where I knew Jesse and Rachel had to be distracted for a period and what would they do, I just felt that it was a great opportunity to insert a cemetery into it. So,
but it adds to the menace of the story. By then, you're deep in the menace.
Yeah.
And death as a motif is all around.
And also that there's an unreality to this woman. There's an almost ghost-like appearance with this woman, and no one else sees her, only Jesse. So it's sort of doubtful in that sense.
Now, the other strong movie reference, cinematic reference in the novel is the film of To Kill a Mockingbird. That's the one with Jem and Scout. And this is a source of the children's courage and bravery, isn't it, for Jesse and Rachel? Rachel's able to look and find some courage where she doesn't have it herself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are several reasons for the reference to the film. One is that, as Rachel explains at one point, Jesse doesn't like black and white, he likes colour. But because he's a TV addict, I thought to use the film, and a film with a moral message and a sense of courage in it, was to allow him to engage with something visual that would give him something more sustainable. For Rachel, of course, the character of Scout, who is a very courageous girl, as people would know in both the book To Kill a Mockingbird and the film version, which I've always been attracted to the film version, was a reference point where she could go over that sort of relationship between a girl in imminent danger and her ability to have courage. But the other point, and it's referenced in their conversation, is that Jesse is a young boy who has never had a father, and he seeks out, in a sense, what we might call father figures, and he imagines or romanticizes about Atticus Finch even as his father figure. And that was one of my preoccupations as a child. That I remember the first time I saw the movie To Kill a Mockingbird, and unlike Jesse, I had read the book several times. I used to go to bed at night imagining that Gregory Peck was my father. So,
you and lots of kids.
Yes, that's right. And it's to have this stable influence in your life, a person who has both moral courage and a quietness about him. He doesn't have to scream at people to feel that he can protect and look after them.
It's such a point of contrast between the worlds of Jem and Scout and the worlds of Jesse and Rachel. They're just poles apart. When Rachel kind of compares the fact that they call their mum Gwen and Jem and Scout call their dad Atticus, yeah, she sort of sees this as a point of similarity, but it's no further from the truth.
No, although, I won't give it away, there's a sort of penultimate scene in the novel toward the end which takes place down their Crown Casino, and I did imagine the character of Boo Radley, who is a great character of literature and great character of film. Robert De Niro's early film role was as Boo Radley.
So Boo is the scary sort of mute man, sort of that, yeah, the kids have all learnt to be scared of.
And a Boo Radley type appears toward this end of this novel only briefly, and for me it was a direct reference point, which again I was very happy to locate in Blood.
Now the ending. How to talk about the ending without talking about the ending. Did you know how you were going to frame the novel when you started sort of transforming that short story into the final work?
I did. I had an ending, and I think one of the, for me, I feel that to have an ending in mind is important to frame or build the architecture of a novel as you're going through. So I had an ending in mind, but I have to confess that I wrote three endings of the novel, two that I was very happy with. One, I thought, this could work. It didn't. I knew that, and certainly the people who I showed it to said, no, that doesn't work, which is great. And of the two that could have been the ending, I chose this one because I think there's a real symbolism that I like about this ending. The other ending puts Jesse in what we might call a different position toward the end of the book.
I think we succeeded in talking about the ending. Listeners will just have to read it for themselves to find out.
They will, and hopefully in one sitting.
I'm imagining so. Debut novelist Tony Birch speaking with the book show's Sarah Lestrange. And his book, Blood, is published by the University of Queensland Press. And Tony Birch has two collections of short stories to his name, Shadow Boxing and Father's Day. And he's also a lecturer in creative writing at Melbourne University.